What's happening, family? Welcome to the podcast, In the Black of My Mind. I'm your host, Al Thomas. Today, we're bringing you part two of the Brian Keene conversation. If you missed part one, go check it out. It was mad interesting. Brian's a bad dude. I just recently reached the 200 subscriber mark on the podcast, and I'd like to thank all of y'all who subscribe. But I need to get to 1,000 subscribers. So do me a favor. Everybody that watches this podcast, get two other people to subscribe. Your family, your friends, your neighbors, Bobby and them, Sue and them. In fact, the whole NM family. Get everybody. All right, you get the point. But if y'all can do that, we can get to that number very quickly. In the meantime, like, subscribe, comment, and share. Share with everybody. How many bodies? Everybody's. Now that we've taken care of the business, let's check out part two. Some quick hitters here, man. I don't want to, I know you got stuff to do. I don't want to monopolize your time, yeah. Bro. Who are your musical influences?
Oh, so many. I mean, you know, from Aaron Copland to Miles Davis to Herbie Hancock to, I mean, Bill Evans, Wes Montgomery, the Beatles, you know, I mean, there's so many. Wow. It depends upon what style of music. I mean, you know, right. Music is such a universal language. I mean, you know, none of those people influenced my love of African music.
Right.
So yeah. It really depends upon what it is, you know. There's value, there's good and bad in everything, you know.
Right.
You know, I sometimes lament, there's of course this racist backlash that's, you know, just beyond stupid.
No, I understand.
Someone like Kendrick, you know, plays on the Super Bowl halftime, you know.
Right.
And on one level, you know, you go, really? You know, you couldn't understand the words, you know, and you like, you know, Fleetwood Mac or Mick Jagger, or, you know. You can understand those? No, you can't.
Not at all. Right.
You know, it's just stupid. But at the same time, I think of, like, if you're going to represent a culture on national television, why didn't you pick Herbie Hancock? You know, because, I mean, there's, you know, at least somebody who's as smart musically as anybody on the planet, you know, why did you pick this, you know, sort of representation of like a commercial representation of ghetto culture? You're just dividing the country. You're giving Trump something to rage about his DEI hire bullshit. You know what I mean? It's not smart, you know. And there are lots of things about Kendrick that I appreciate. He's got good lyrics compared to a lot of rap artists.
Right.
I mean, the music is not music, really. You know, it's like, even the groove is sort of pedestrian. You know, there's no melody, there's no chords. I mean, the singer was really good.
There's no bridge.
Woman who sang. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, there's so much great music that you could represent a culture with. And that just doesn't hold a candle to the stuff that's possible to do. And so I think that, and I think the same thing is true when, you know, we have up with people and the white community or whatever it is, you know, they're just the stupid ass shit. I mean, you know, Kid Rock, you know, every bit, it's dumber. It's way dumber. You know what I mean? So, because even the lyrics are dumb, you know, and there's no melody going on there either. And there's no, you know, I mean, it's just stupid shit. And it's music that's designed by, you know, it's being promoted by accountants, you know, to dumb people down, just to milk their ignorance, really. Because they're comfortable with that ignorance.
And you're saying that's pretty much the same thing I was saying. I was on online, one of the social medias, just wailing. It's like we've got all of these great musicians here, you know, that they that, and this is the best we have to offer. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong, you know.
The choreography was really good.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But he wasn't. He, you know, he's going around like this. You know, it's just.
Well, he's not a dancer.
Yeah, yeah, he's not Michael Jackson. You know.
Right. Right.
So James Brown or whatever. You know, he's. He writes some interesting lyrics.
And maybe Hubert Laws is still here, man. Come on.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't think Hubert was doing anything last Sunday, man. Come on.
Yeah. They're it's about money. It's not
exactly.
It's not about values.
And
again, you know, a lot of money is going to do good. Money's going to do if you don't have air to breathe and water to drink and,
right you know, food to eat.
It's a misplaced value system that we grow up with. You know, it's instilled into us in our schools. You know, if you don't get good grades, you won't get a good job. If you don't get a good job, you won't get good pay. If you, you know, right, and then you won't have a color TV like mine, you know.
Hi, this is Greg Thomas of Parliament Funkadelic. And you're listening to In the Black of My Mind podcast. Check us out. Woof.
All right. I'm. What
you
is
have
the greatest
job in front of you? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Man, I'm enjoying this immensely. What would you consider to be the greatest accomplishment of your life to date?
I'm working on a symphony that I wrote when I was 31 years old in 1984. And I put it off because it's 32 minutes. It's a real symphony. And it supposes that we're on this planet together and that, you know, that a tree looks the same on one side of the imaginary line in Canada as it does in Vermont. And that, that we live in this environment, we're in this miraculous opportunity, really. If you think about this, you know, no life anywhere we've ever seen in our entire existence, right. So I'm thinking, what if all the music in the world played in the same piece? What if you got, you know, African music and symphonies and rock and Middle Eastern and you put them all on one place? Because that's what where we are. We're all in one place.
Right.
We all share this one place.
Right.
And I had this music that starts with this sort of energy that comes out of a cloud and develops into this energy 7-8 thing that goes through thematic developments that go through all these different sort of aspects and then comes back to this sort of celebratory all inclusive sort of ending that has then a sort of serene gratefulness at the end that then just fades out into this little energy stream back into the cloud. And that's what I'm working on right now.
Nice.
And I think that I feel like that's going to be my sort of final statement. I would say that, you know, there are things that I'm known the best for. Like the theme to New York is really interesting. You know, the history of New York, I scored that with the Burns. And they were in the edit room. There were, you might as well do the history of the world, right? you know, do history of New York. And they're saying, well, you know, we tried Rhapsody in Blue. It's a good choice, written by a New York composer in the 20s, the height of New York, right? Except for American Airlines ruined it. Every time you hear it, you think you're going on an airplane.
Right, that's right.
So they say, we need you to write a Rhapsody in Blue, and we need it to work for the Dutch in the 1600s and still work for Puerto Ricans coming in the 1950s. And I said, are you fucking out of your mind? and so I went home and I thought about it. And then it occurred to me that there was something these people had in common, that all people who came to New York have in common. They all came to New York searching for a home in which they could reinvent themselves. And that was a common human aspiration that anybody could relate to. And it, it united all these people in this one place. And that is what New York is.
Right.
By developing that theme that happened to work for all those different cultures, we unified the whole story of New York. And so I would say that's one of my prouder accomplishments, is coming up with that.
Okay. What's on your bucket list?
Not much. I want to finish the symphony. I want to do some experimentations with some of the electronic possibilities out there. There's amazing sounds that are available with electronic music, and they're totally underutilized. They're never utilized for artistic reasons. They're utilized just to get the best, you know, backbeat sound or whatever it is. You know, it's like, it's totally underutilized for and wasted on pop. So I'd like to do something that's just sort of interesting with that. But it's not burning, you know, it's something that I'd like to do if I get around to it. But when I plan to finish the symphony this year, or beginning of next year at the latest. We're going to have a symphony, you know, if it's written, and we're just having the first sessions now. So that's going to be a big project. It'll take close to a year to record. You know,
oh wow,
and because it's that big, you know, music from musicians I know from all over the world, from China, from Middle East, from Ireland, from, you know, South America, so on.
Wow.
It'll take a minute, plus a full orchestra.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. So we're gonna, you know, we'll work on that. It'll probably take half the year just to mix with all those people.
Yeah, really. I'm thinking all of these. Wow, it's like how many yeah. tracks do you have, bro? Just
yeah. Well, you know, I don't have to do anything, and that's sort of a wonderful thing too. Is that, you know, if I choose to do nothing, I can do nothing.
Right.
You know,
that's not cool.
I think that there's so much more to contribute, and particularly in the third form of immortality that my grandfather talked about. You know, I mean, a lot of people aren't going to want to hear anything from an old codger like me, but, you know, I'll still throw it out there for those who can benefit.
Oh, please. I'd want to hear it. And it's interesting because on your webpage, I start going through and I'm looking. I went through all of the documentaries and all the films and all the music that you have up there. And I was like, wow, man, I got about 20 songs in my catalog.
Yeah.
I got
I didn't have the terror of having the TV and seeing a commercial for something that you were supposed to be scoring and you haven't finished yet. So that's the kind of life that I've led, you know. Serious pressure, you know. So when you have that, it sort of puts a fire under your butt to get a lot accomplished.
Right.
You know, in the music factory days, it would be like we'd bust ourselves, you know, to make a deadline, you know, working all nighters and stuff like that. And you get into the office the next day and there's another FedEx package for the new project. So it was like that, you know,
getting one night's sleep and then do it all over.
Do it all over again.
Hey, this is Marion Meadows and you're listening to and watching In the Black of My Mind podcast.
Where's the coolest place you've ever traveled to?
Well, you know, so many places are cool in their own regard. I mean, like, you know, I remember having a gig in Indianapolis, and I thought, what the hell am I going to do? You know, this is when Dan Quayle was vice president, you know, and I thought, this is the lamest place on the planet to have to go, right? But it was in Indiana University, and it was like a sort of a pocket of intellectualism in the middle of Indiana. And the opening act was this guitar player named John Harrington, who was an amazing guitar player, ended up working with the Brecker Brothers.
Oh, wow.
And he just happened to be there. He was the opening act. You know, so you never know what you're going to find. It's, you know, there's beauty in the wide open vistas of the American West. There's beauty in the mountains of various places. Italy is gorgeous, all over the country. You know, Paris is amazing. Istanbul is amazing. You know, the Acropolis in Greece is amazing. The Dead Sea in Israel is amazing. The you know, I mean, there are so many amazing things. And at the same time, you know, If you're the type of person who's really going to interact with a place, then go out and see it. But if you're the type of person who goes to the Grand Canyon, goes, "Yep, there's a big hole in the ground."
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
then look it on it. Look it online. You know.
Yeah. Right. What makes you unique?
Well, I do consider myself a little unusual. And I think that came from initially a suspicion of authority. You know, I did a film about NASCAR and Richard Petty, who was a great NASCAR driver, sums up this feeling in the South where he says, "You never put a comma where God's put a period." And I'm thinking, okay, first of all, that doesn't make any sense. But besides that,
what he's really saying
is it's virtuous not to question authority. And if you take that mindset, then you're shutting off all this information, right? You're shutting off skepticism, your evaluative reasoning, evidence, things like this, and you're shutting off your brain from thinking. And I think this explains a lot about America today. Whereas, you know, I remember like going to elementary school class in the Cuban Missile Crisis, right? I was in fifth grade or something, and the teacher would say, "Okay, we're going to all practice getting under our wooden desks in case of a nuclear attack." And I'm like,
right.
"For kindling? What? You know?" And then we'd go, "You're being incorrigible. You go to the, you know, they give me a detention." And you know, by seventh grade, I was getting audiences for my detentions. You know, I didn't buy the bullshit. You know, I thought authority was interested in authority, right? In preserving their authority. And I think I was right about that. It's interesting that I could perceive that when I was still in grade school. But it probably had to do with, you know, having sort of a wacky family, you know, alcoholism and craziness. And so, you know, in a neighborhood where everybody had the same house, we sort of played together with all the same equality of rules, and everybody knew about each other's shit, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, my parents were considered kind of wacky, and there were other wacky parents on there, but you know, my family was my, you know, childhood neighborhood friends. And you know, it was in the era where you go out and you play in the woods, and you know, you'd start hearing the horns and, you know, clanging things or whatever, that it was dinner time. And then you went home, and then you had dinner, you did your homework, and you went to bed. I never went to bed, you know, that, you know, I fake like I was going to bed, but I would do other things. But you know, it was a great experience, because it was, it gave me a sense of perspective. And I wasn't necessarily just obedient. I think that's actually kind of important for development, is not to necessarily do what everybody else does.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because when I was in sixth grade, my teacher said that they called me a nonconformist. And they brought in the school psychologist and the principal and my parents and all, you know, counselors and all this stuff. And, you know, like, he's a nonconformist. He refuses to be like everybody else. You know, I'm like, well, wait a minute. What is that? Why are you doing that to me in sixth grade and stuff? And then, you know, and it wasn't, you know, I thought it was a slight early on. And then later on in life, I realized I am a nonconformist. I'm not like everybody else.
And it was a slight.
but it was something, you know, that's something that should be celebrated, not
exactly, you know, exactly. Yeah, we don't have that. We don't have that sort of culture where we celebrate difference. We used to. I remember musically, you know, when I was growing up, you know, we had Cousin Brewster, WABC, he would play like the Four Tops, the Beatles, Frank Sinatra, and Ramsey Lewis on the same radio station.
Right. Wow.
And so everybody had that common experience. And, you know, and difference was celebrated. So when, you know, a group like Yes came out, you know, you heard them on the radio. Nobody sounded like them.
Right.
The Beatles, when they came out, nobody sounded like them. Bob Dylan, when he came out, you know, people were like listening to, like, you know, the Letterman and shit like that. When Miles Davis recorded Kind of Blue in 1958, the number one record was Bobby Darin's Splish Splash, I'm Taking a Bath, right? If it was today, the robots would be going, okay, we have to find somebody who sounds like Bobby Darin. And anybody wrote a song about taking a shower or soap or, you know, and this is like the kind of stupidity that happens. These people are marketing music that don't know anything about music.
Right.
Because Kind of Blue ended up selling 40 times Bobby Darin's entire catalog, just that one record.
You're right. Okay? Exactly.
Because they didn't know shit about music. Mm. You know, but John Hammond did. He was the one who signed Miles Davis too.
Right. Wow.
So they used to have people like that at labels that were listening for the real shit, right?
Right.
They don't bother with that anymore. It's all about robots and, like, you know, trends and it's all about money.
And popularity.
There's no interest, zero interest in music, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In that business.
Ask to be witnessed by the Grammys.
Right. It's just, you know, it's just machine made bullshit, really, you know.
Yeah. All the categories in the Grammys that I was interested in were given off camera and stuff. So,
I made a quip a few years ago about that. You know, we shouldn't criticize the Grammys. We should change the categories, because, you know, clearly they're not interested in music. So we should have most jewelry for a rap artist. Or, you know. Least discernible melody. I don't know.
Exactly. Oh man.
Most robotic track. There's lots of things we could choose.
Oh, no doubt.
Just adapt it to modern music. Just be truthful about it. People don't like to be truthful. Mm. That's like you talk to a Trumper and you tell them the truth and they call you a hater for it.
Exactly.
Evidence and that kind of stuff.
Oh, that doesn't mean
hating.
Anything. It's false news. Yeah. False news. This is factual, bro. What's going on here?
Yeah. No, they don't want that. They don't want the factual stuff.
No.
They like the Richard Pettys of the world, Never put a comma where God's put a period and I'm God.
What is the most important decision you've made to date?
I've made that decision many, many times, and that's not to give up.
Man, the utmost. Wow. And more wow. I mean, it's so important, you can give up, but I mean, it won't, you won't find it.
You don't know where you're going to get.
Wow. What's your favorite song? And not one that you wrote, but what's your favorite song? Get to choose one song.
Well, I have lots of favorites. I would say one of the best songs written in the last half century, in our pop mentality, would be Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I love the orchestral version she did with that, with Wayne Shorter playing on it. As an old woman, she sings it. It's really poignant when she sings it like that,
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Because it just talks about life and the way it really is, and for a 22-year-old woman to have written that,
right,
it had to happen by accident. I don't know how she came up with such a brilliant song, but she was 22 when she wrote it.
Yeah. And you're right. When she did it with Wayne Shorter later on, it became really more poignant. It's like,
way
wow.
more poignant.
You reflect back.
Really don't know life at all.
Right. At 22.
After having lived it for some
years. Right. At 22, I was like, okay, I get it. You're young. You have it. But after having lived the life and stuff, and then at the age that you are, and you're still singing that, it's like, and if you think about it, it's like, you really don't.
You don't.
The more, wow.
But it's like life isn't fair. Life isn't necessarily easy,
right.
But it is miraculous.
Mm.
And if you focus on that, and you focus on the gratitude that you get to be part of this miracle, then does it really matter?
Mm.
Your odds of being here are just so remote. I mean, think about you're the only living beings in, light years from here.
Mm.
If you went one planet farther away, you couldn't exist there. It'd be too cold. If you went one planet closer to the sun, it'd be too hot.
Right.
So you're just in that one little right place in this little ecosystem. And, your ancestors had to survive getting eaten by dinosaurs and then drawn and quartered by a religious institution. And they had to meet exactly the same place, and they had to procreate, and they had to raise kids so they could procreate. Mm. And after all that stuff, let alone humans evolution, that something hit a compound and formed an amoeba, formed a fish, formed a lizard, formed a Tea Party Republican, then a toad and a porcupine. And, you get to be a human and, in this age of heat and air conditioning. You know, it's just truly miraculous. Mm. And then if you think just the sperm odds alone in the age of porn, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, your existence is like less likely than winning the lottery 20 times in a row. But don't think about that we won the lottery 20 times in a row already just by existing.
Hi, my name is Howard Cloud. Please watch In the Black of My Mind with host Al Thomas.
This last question is probably the most difficult of all the questions that I've asked. And that is, tell me your life story in one sentence.
I would say that I'm somebody who was driven by a spiritual force I didn't understand and came to the conclusion that I didn't need to understand, and that my actions and the resulting life consequences of those actions really emanate from that sense, from that innate sense that I've had since I was as early as I can remember. I mean, I used to go to my grandparents' Catholic church and not understand anything. They would just stand up, kneel down, mumble, you know. But there was something about the aura of the pageantry of it that just felt like I was connecting to something. And then, you know, when I went hunting with my cousins in the South, which there's a crude of places you could possibly imagine, and we'd shoot these guns, I shot some birds off a wire, and they were all excited. Oh, what a great shot! You know, it was from like 100 yards away or something. And I felt terrible, you know, and I realized, you know, there's something else going on here. I'm not like them, you know. I'm serving a different master, you know. You know, I love the Bob Dylan song. He says, "You may serve the devil, you may serve the Lord, but you got to serve somebody."
Right. That's for sure.
Yeah, and so you know, that's, I would say that, you know, that's the simple answer. That's the essence of what drives me to music, what I try to communicate through music, what drives me in life, you know. That's, and the irony is that I can't tell you that what's driving me isn't a figment of my imagination or real. I don't have the ability to tell that. And I've become okay with that I don't have that ability. That's why I'm a squattist.
No doubt. And on that note, Brian, man, I thank you so much, man.
My pleasure.
This was so great, man. And you've opened me up now, because I've, after looking at, as I said, your webpage, I got to go back and check out some of the movies. And then listening to you talk now, I've got to listen more to the soundtrack, you know, of these different movies as well. And I was up in your library and listening to different things. I was like, wow, man, this dude's
great, it's a, you know, unfortunately, it's a big chore to listen to all my stuff. I mean,
I won't get there, but
I had to make a greatest hits tape for somebody, and the first cut was 9 hours long. And I was I just took one project, you know, like the best cut from each project of a big major project. And it was already 9 hours, and I was like,
"Wow, man, that's deep."
So stuff will get to where it gets to, you know. You just throw it out there. It was inspired for the right reasons, and it will get to where it gets to, and it's out there allowing me to make more. So
right now, your studio is in Monroe.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's in my starter house, which we fixed up last year because we decided to downsize, my partner and I. And I didn't want to rebuild a studio at 70. I didn't want to give up composing music. So I ended up fixing the living part of the studio up the upstairs, you know, and we put stupid stuff in, like a waterfall and stuff like that. We just left the studio pretty much as it's been for years. I mean, this is basically the way it's been since 2003.
Okay.
So I'm living in my starter home.
Nice.
it's a little changed, but it's still my starter home.
Yeah.
And I like living in a place where the mortgage is paid, taxes are fairly reasonable. I can go around the corner and be wherever I want. I can go to New Haven 30 minutes. I can get to the train in 20 minutes and be in New York in an hour. I can be in Westport, my hometown, in 20 minutes.
And
I don't have to pay Westport prices for the real estate there.
And deal with
like, you know, not being able to move at a four-way intersection because of snobby SUV owners. To me it makes sense, you know. I don't have kids in a school system or worry about or any of that stuff, so and it's kind of anonymous here, you know. I'm in the woods and for years we made the outside of this house look like a middle class house. We put like a blow up frosty at Christmas time, you know, even though no one lived here. We didn't want the town looking in, you know, seeing all the machines in there and start taxing you. So I'm a long-standing criminal here. They all know. I mean, the cops, they had an alarm system. You know, the cops would come here all the time and look at all this shit and their eyes bug out. I got them like, I remember the first time that happened, I was working on a Stephen King movie and I got Stephen King to autograph a poster. And they gave it to the cop, was a real fan.
Oh wow!
And they did me solids for another 10 years after that.
So nice. Yeah.
It worked out fine.
Okay. Well, once again, Brian, I thank you so much, man. And I will definitely let you know when this comes out and stuff.
Great, so
that you can check it out. And
well, thanks, Al. Appreciate you having me on. And
man, pleasure
good luck
all
to you.
Mine. Yeah, thank you, bro. This has been another episode of In the Black of My Mind podcast. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, and share. Until next week, y'all be blessed.